Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Getting along with our enemies today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Happy February. Hopefully it's been a good month. It is a short one, but we'll end it with some style, with an animals lesson. We're glad to have you join us, and I am glad to have Gabe joining me. Hello, Gabe.
Well, hello there, Garrett. I'm happy to be talking about animals.
Are you an animals fan?
I am an animals fan. Sometimes we talk about, like, you know, the animals that we like most, for example, like pets. Maybe you might say, are you a dog person or are you a cat person? I grew up with cats almost all throughout my childhood. I would say I'm more of a cat person than a dog person. What about you? Are there certain animals that you're more fond of?
Well, I always loved going to the zoo and seeing kind of some wild animals. Mm-hmm. I've never really been a fan of pets. That's why I don't have any.
Really? Furless pets, like a turtle or like a fish or something.
Looking at them, mm-hmm. and I like the idea of it, but I don't think taking care of them would be worth it for me.
Yeah.
So I'll look at them when I go to other people's houses.
Right.
Well, as we jump in today, we're talking about some animals that like to play with danger. And I want to ask you, Gabe, are you someone who likes to seek out danger, or do you prefer comfort, and in what ways?
That's an interesting question, and I have to be careful how I answer this, otherwise I might reveal some things about my childhood and some bad decisions from my teenage years, because at the time, I guess you could say I was interested in how fire works. How fire works in different settings, and maybe did some things that I shouldn't have done. But, like, obviously when you're around fire, that could be dangerous.
Sure.
Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah. Why do you think that is? I guess that's too psychological of a question.
I think maybe boys in particular we just gravitate towards those kinds of things, right? Like explosions. Fire, yeah, things like that. And seeing how much you can do without letting things get out of hand. Yeah.
I think people who know me might think I gravitate more toward the comfort side. And that's probably true in some ways. Mm-hmm. I do appreciate a bit of comfort. And I certainly gravitate away from conflict at times. Mm-hmm. But every time I go to a theme park, I realize that one path I could have taken through life is like an adrenaline junkie. Like, roller coasters are never tall enough. They're never fast enough. I just want more.
Really?
And I just get a real rush out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I really delved into that part of myself, I could really embrace that danger side.
Have you done things like skydiving or bungee jumping, things like that that actually feel super risky?
I would do those if someone paid for me.
Okay.
They seem a little expensive for my taste.
They kind of are. I did bungee jumping once. I would do it again, but man, there's nothing like that thrill. I was super scared going off that bridge.
Yeah, but bungee jumping seems a little freaky to me. Mm-hmm. I know it's very dangerous and people get seriously injured.
Right.
Skydiving, on the other hand, seems pretty reasonable. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little cost prohibitive at this point in my life.
Right.
Yes. Well, friends, what do you think? Do you seek out danger or comfort? Well, today, the animal we're talking about actually seeks out comfort in danger. We'll talk about what we mean by that. Today's article is titled "A Peculiar But Propitious Pairing." We'll talk all about that. Let's jump into our article.
A Peculiar But Propitious Pairing. Endangered herons seek out a Chicago Zoo's red wolves for protection. Small and stocky birds perch, hunched over, on the treetops and branches of Lake Okeechobee on the edge of Florida's swampy Everglades for the better part of winter. The alligators swarming the murky waters below don't faze the black-crowned night herons. In fact, the birds count on them for protection. And when some herons fly away for the summer, they seek out other animals that can do the same. Illinois' last remaining breeding colony. This heron is the world's most widely distributed species of its kind, found on every continent except for Australia and Antarctica. But it's been endangered in Illinois since the 1970s, as the population has declined across the Great Lakes region because of human harassment and disappearing wetlands.
All right, let's talk about this interesting animal. First of all, we had kind of a big word in our title there, Gabe, that word propitious. Mm-hmm. What is a propitious pairing?
Right. Well, first, propitious often means likely to result in success, or there's going to be a favorable result somehow. So it's a very positive word. Positive, propitious. Actually, speaking of peas, that's, I think, one intention of using that word in this title is because it's memorable now with those other P words. A peculiar but propitious pairing. Peculiar, of course, means strange, but a pairing is like when you put two things together. So maybe you don't naturally think of these two things as going together most of the time, but here we are.
This almost sounds like a phrase you could use when you go to a wedding between maybe a slightly strange couple. You say this is a peculiar but propitious pairing.
Well, Garrett, if you ever host a wedding and the couple that's getting married is kind of strange, maybe you can use these words.
It might happen. Who knows? We'll see. Either way, we're not talking about human couples here. We're talking about a couple of different kinds of animals. We see at the top of our article there, endangered herons seek out a Chicago Zoo's red wolves for protection. We're talking all about herons, which are kind of funny-looking birds, right?
Yeah. I don't know much about herons.
Yeah, if you look at pictures of them, they have a strange neck is the first thing that pops out. It looks like the letter S, and they kind of shoot it out when they're going to eat something they're going to eat.
Yeah, are the herons, are those the birds that are around the parks here in Taipei, and they're kind of tall, and they're very still? They like to think that nobody sees them, but actually they're super obvious.
I don't think it's like those brown ones that you're talking about.
That's what I'm talking about.
Those don't have as much of the heron-type neck.
The S-neck, yeah.
Although, who knows? Maybe those are a type of heron. Again, we're not biologists here, but I believe those are slightly different. Well, here we're talking about herons somewhere else. These are small and stocky birds. They perch hunched over on the treetops and branches of Lake Okeechobee on the edge of Florida's swampy Everglades. They're hunched over. What does that look like?
Yeah, if something is hunched like a person or an animal, that means they're bent down and kind of bent forward so that back seems to form a curve in some way. This word always makes me think of the classic tale, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Some people suffer from a condition where their back is actually in kind of a hunch shape.
Right. It's kind of like you have a camel's hump on your back there. Well, this is located in, it's kind of southern Florida, right near the Everglades, this popular place to go. There's a lot of water and a lot of wild animals, and it's quite warm, and that's why these birds go there for the better part of winter.
What is the better part of winter? That phrase could be confusing. For me as a Westerner, I think, well, Christmas is the best part of winter. But that's not what the better part of something means.
No, better, coming from that word good, is not really what we're talking about here. We're just talking about the majority of winter. Well, when these birds are here, there are also alligators there. They're swarming the murky waters below, but they don't phase the black-crowned night herons.
That's right. So there's some great words in this sentence here. They're alligators are swarming. That means a lot of them kind of swimming in the water together below in kind of a crowded way. The murky water, so it's very unclear. You could also use the word turbid, probably. And they don't phase the black-crowned night herons. What does it mean they're not phasing these herons?
Well, they don't react in a negative way. They're not surprised amazed by them. They're able to kind of go along like nothing's happening, like the alligators aren't even there.
That's right. We might even say unfazed. These herons are going on unfazed, whereas maybe another animal or person might react in a very obvious way.
Right. So these black-crowned night herons really do rely on the alligators for protection. And we see at the end of this paragraph, they like to do that same thing in other places they go. And that's mostly what we'll be talking about for the next 2 days. Specifically, we're talking about the state of Illinois, which is pretty far from Florida, in the middle of the United States. And here we're talking about this one kind of heron. It's the world's most widely distributed species of its kind. So we're not talking about all herons here. We're talking about one kind.
That's right. And it's, like you said, it's widely distributed. That means it can be found in a lot of different places. It's not just, you know, crowded all in one place. An example of an animal that's not widely distributed might be a wombat or a kangaroo. You know, unless you might see some in zoos around the world, but really you're going to see the majority of them in Australia.
Right. There's no pandas wandering around Canada, for instance. Well, we see that this species can be found on every continent except Australia and Antarctica. I saw online you can find other kinds of herons in Australia, but maybe not this kind. Well, this one's been endangered in Illinois since the 1970s as the population has declined across this region. Endangered, of course, means that they're in danger of disappearing. There aren't enough of them, or they really aren't reproducing.
That's right. And the reason is, our lesson says, because of humans, specifically human harassment, right? And harassment is always a negative thing. This is when someone behaves in an unpleasant or even a threatening way towards somebody else, or in this case, towards nature.
Yeah, and harassment is a word that we see a lot of discussion about in society, right, Gabe?
Yeah, well, especially when it comes to over the last couple of decades with the prominence, the recent kind of importance of DEI, right? Diversity, equity, or equality and inclusion. Like, there's a huge emphasis on making sure that, you know, you're not harassing your coworkers and things like that. And there's different forms of harassment, of course. But harassment in general is always a negative thing.
Yeah, harassment could take many different forms. There's a lot of different, I'd say, magnitudes to it. Mm-hmm. If I were to go over there and punch you in the leg right now, that's harassment.
Or if someone were to slap somebody else at the Oscars, that's harassment too.
That's absolutely harassment. But like, I don't know, kidnapping someone and torturing them, that's harassment too, but is way worse.
Yeah.
So there's different magnitudes to this. Well, humans are harassing these animals in a way that, you know, we're building homes or buildings in the areas where they used to live. We create a lot of noise, we create a lot of light, and that's harassment toward these animals. And it causes a disappearing of wetlands.
That's right. And you know, the things you were mentioning, Garrett, like noise and light, the noise pollution or light pollution, things like that. It's like, you know, humans aren't intentionally harassing nature or things like herons.
Usually not,
right? You know, maybe as a little boy, you like to go and chase a chicken or something like that. But like, yeah, usually we're not. So this is a great point that you brought up. There are probably a lot of things we need to be made aware of. And that's what our lesson is maybe going to get into as well. But it'll talk mostly about this propitious pairing. But we do need to take a look at that word wetlands, because I grew up around a famous or near a famous wetlands near Taichung, Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And it's called Gaomei Shidi. And even though I grew up close to that area, like I only visited it for the first time 2 years ago, but this is usually referring to a land or an area that's covered with shallow water and it has soil, but the soil is saturated or just full of moisture. And you could think of often marshes or swamps bogs, maybe bogs, but swamps and marshes could be synonyms for wetlands.
Yeah, they each have kind of unique characteristics, but they're very similar. Mm-hmm. There's usually a lot of plant and animal activity in these wetlands, or sometimes we could say wetlands, mm-hmm. as well as another pronunciation. These are really diverse places. Sometimes you can see them kind of on coastal areas as well, or we could think of mangrove forests are kind of similar. But anyway, these are the kinds of places that are disappearing, and they're the places that herons love to hang out in. All right, we have more to learn about them and their propitious pairing. Let's move on and learn more in the rest of our article.
For the last 15 years, however, Chicago has become a popular summer hub and the location of the last remaining breeding colony of the species in the state, specifically atop the Red Wolf enclosure at the Lincoln Park Zoo. Hundreds of black-crowned night herons flock there starting in mid-March every year, migrating from nearby Indiana and Kentucky, and from farther away like Louisiana, Florida, and Georgia, and more recently, even Cuba. It's a story that most people find a little bit ironic, that they settle above this particular predatory species. But seems that they have this really great, what's called a facultative relationship, mutually beneficial relationship, said Henry Adams, wildlife management coordinator at the zoo's Urban Wildlife Institute and resident expert on black-crowned night herons. In Chicago, and in the obvious absence of alligators, the birds have found the largest carnivorous animals and apex predators around. They rely on the red wolves to scare away smaller threats, such as raccoons and other birds of prey, from their nests. The wolves remain undisturbed and, for the most part, uninterested. Toward the end of April 2025, staff counted some 768 adult herons in the colony, breaking the previous record of 751 in mid-May 2022.
All right, for the last 15 years, we're talking about the area around Chicago, of course, one of the biggest cities in the United States. It's become a popular summer hub of the last remaining breeding colony of this heron species. So they're all meeting there for their summer conferences.
It sounds like it. If herons had conferences, this is where the hub would be.
Absolutely. Well, they meet specifically atop the Red Wolf enclosure at the Lincoln Park Zoo. I think it is interesting to think about zoos as a place where kind of zookeepers specifically curate or decide on specific animals they want to have there. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't keep wild animals from just kind of moving in. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Are you referring to like kind of what's going on here?
Yeah, you could have birds, you could have bugs flying in.
Yes.
You know, I mean, probably not just random dogs off the street, but
no. And you're usually not going to get an elephant wandering into the lion enclosure.
That'd be kind of cool.
I mean, well, maybe in some countries.
Maybe somewhere in Africa. It'd be right. Exciting. Not for the elephant, probably. But no. Anyways, yeah, zoos are interesting places. This is at Lincoln Park Zoo. Not that Lincoln Park
not
for any
band.
Rock band fans out there. There are hundreds of black-crowned night herons that flock there starting in mid-March every year. They flock there or they fly in and gather. Mm-hmm. And they migrate from nearby Indiana and Kentucky and from farther away like Louisiana, Florida, and Georgia, more recently even Cuba. So there's a lot of movement going on here, right, Gabe?
Yeah, that's right. These black-crowned night herons are coming from all over the place. You can see here how distributed these birds are, at least in this part of the world.
Yeah, and somehow they have found this one place at the zoo that seems to be a pretty safe place for them. They're seeking out the Red Wolf enclosure. An enclosure is one specific part of a zoo. It's closed off, and a certain kind of animal is kept inside.
That's right. It makes me think of the word cage, although a cage is a specific type of enclosure, usually with bars on all sides and a ceiling and a floor that keeps the animal inside. An enclosure is not necessarily a cage.
Yeah, it could be just with glass or other kinds of walls. Well, we see this is a story that most people find a little bit ironic. I find that word fascinating.
Yeah.
It became very popularized by a song a long time ago.
Is it called Ironic?
By Alanis Morissette, yes. Which has been widely criticized for talking about things that are not actually ironic.
That's right.
Yeah, something that's ironic is something that happens even though it's not something you'd expect.
Yeah.
Here's an example.
Yeah.
Like if a fire station burns down.
That's right. Or the example I always think of is if an ambulance gets into an accident on the way to the hospital. That's a little bit ironic.
Somewhat. It might be more like a tow truck needs to be towed.
Yeah, a tow truck needs to be towed, right? You know, speaking of that song, Ironic, I was thinking, like, what is ironic? There has to be something ironic about this song. And I think the irony with that song is that it was produced by, you know, a country that speaks native English who should know what ironic means, and yet these producers just let this singer come out with this song. That's a little bit ironic.
Sure. I see what you mean. All right. Well, it's a little bit ironic. They settle above this particular predatory species. So the irony is you wouldn't expect these birds to be near these wolves that actually might want to eat them. But it seems that they get along really great in what's called a facultative relationship. That's a relationship where both sides, they really benefit from each other, but they wouldn't have to. It's not like a symbiotic relationship where they really, really need each other.
Yeah, I also thought about that contrast, Garrett, a symbiotic relationship. I believe clownfish and sea anemones kind of need each other.
Yeah.
Right, in many cases. There are other examples of symbiotic relationships, but here they could do without each other, but they happen to be mutually beneficial.
Absolutely. All right, we heard this from Henry Adams, a wildlife management coordinator at the zoo's Urban Wildlife Institute. He's talking about these black-crowned night herons. And we see in the obvious absence of alligators, which are not in this enclosure, the birds have found the largest carnivorous animals, that's animals that eat meat, and apex predators around. Gabe, what are apex predators?
Well, I like to think of it as like the top of the food chain, right? Because sometimes we talk about the food chain. The very bottom is the most weak and vulnerable animals that are eaten by something else. And those are eaten by something else and something else on top. Apex predators is at the top, usually. It's an animal that kills and eats other animals, but is usually the one that's not actually eaten by anything else.
Yeah. So that word apex means the top. Like if you're talking about three-dimensional shapes, the very top of it is the apex.
So in the ocean, for example, an apex predator might be a shark.
Yeah, you have quite a few different ones. A killer whale would also be considered that. Even like a big blue whale.
Sure.
They don't really, they're not an apex predator, but they're not eaten by anything else.
Yeah, until they die and then.
Sure.
Yeah, their bodies are eaten.
Yeah.
By, yeah.
So interesting ways to look at how different animals interact with each other. These herons here rely on the red wolves to scare away smaller threats, such as raccoons and other birds of prey from their nests. Gabe, you were telling me about raccoons earlier.
I was. Off air, I was sharing that raccoons are my favorite animal.
And Gabe, I think that's crazy.
Why?
Raccoons are so annoying.
They can be annoying. I think one reason I like them is because they're obviously wild creatures, and yet they're like fearless. They just come into the city sometimes, go through your trash. They're fun to look at, too. They have a beautiful, you know, fur pattern.
I imagine when you were in college, you must have interacted with them a decent amount.
How did you know? I actually saw quite a few raccoons when I was in university. I was walking outside my friend's apartment at night, and then a raccoon was walking across the grass in front. He turns around, looks at me, decides that he is scary, so he stands up on his back, on his feet, and puts his hands up as if as if he is going to scare me. And I was like, oh, that is so cute. You're so cute.
Well, I ask because I also went to university in Southern California, and there were tons of them all around. They'd dig through trash.
Uh-huh.
They'd get into fights with skunks outside my window.
That's annoying.
And then one time I was going for a hike on the beach, mm-hmm. and I couldn't keep going along the trail because there was like a family of them that just stared me down and wouldn't move.
Really?
And started hissing like,
so, you know, I think our experiences with raccoons will kind of determine how much we like them.
Well, you have a cute little raccoon in that show, Dora the Explorer, as mm-hmm. well. Well, friends, this is somewhat irrelevant to our article. These raccoons stay away from the herons because of these great red wolves.
So you're not the only one that thinks raccoons are annoying. These herons do as well.
Absolutely. They agree with me. The wolves remain undisturbed and for the most part uninterested. This colony or group of herons at this enclosure is growing. We see there might be about 768 adult herons in the colony, and that breaks a previous record. Well, we have more to learn about what they're doing at this annual conference at the zoo, but we'll have to wait until tomorrow to learn more. For today, my name is Garrett.
My name is Gabe.
And we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.